Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com. All right, I'm going to continue our discussion about NATO, Zelensky, the U.S.'s role in this war as well, with President Trump has taken over as commander-in-chief. That's interesting as background. Got a little more on that later on in the program. First, though, we're going to talk today, our National Guard troops, they can be sent to war, even if there's not an official announcement of war. There's a bill in our legislature to try and change that. Where does it come from? It comes from a young man named Liam McCollum, who was vice chair of the Libertarian Party in Montana. We're going to chat with the youth of America today on Voices of Montana. Launch right into this one today. We got just this first half of the program to talk about this bill, but also I think it'll be interesting to chat with the gentleman kind of spurring it on here. It's Liam McCollum, who's vice chair of the Montana Libertarian Party. He interned at the Independence Institute. We frequently have Rob Nadelson, who's a member of that institute, on the program here. Also was a legislative assistant for Americans for Prosperity as well. And at a young age, come out of Laurel, Montana. His teacher was Lee Deming, who is a representative and actually real busy this week. Transmittal deadline is this Friday, so there's no break for those guys up in the Capitol. Let's welcome Liam McCollum here. Liam, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. Appreciate this. There's a bill that we're going to talk about here and things that, I didn't know, I guess. It kind of makes sense. First off, Lee Deming, Representative Lee Deming, is carrying this bill, and we'll get an update on it, HB 404, but tell us what it does.
Yeah, so in short, really what it does is it prevents the Montana National Guard from being deployed to foreign combat zones overseas if Congress has not done its constitutional duty under Article 1, Section 8, Clause 11 to declare war. Over the last two decades, really, we've seen Congress abdicate this authority and let the executive branch take us to many foreign conflicts overseas. And a lot of people kind of assume that the National Guard, the state's National Guard, is made up of weekend warriors, that they train once a month. But that's really not true. The National Guard has sort of become the backbone of the military in the last two decades, really since Vietnam. And it made up more than 45% of the entire deployed personnel since 2001, since 9/11.
Wow.
And around 20% of the entire casual. Our own Montana National Guard, they deploy overseas to foreign combat zones regularly, including Syria, where many of my friends actually saw combat with ISIS. So this is something that happens currently. There are combat zones all around the world that our National Guardsmen are being sent to. And we think that it's time to kind of rein this in. I saw a stat you might find interesting this morning, that in the upcoming midterm election, the people who will be voting in it, we will have people who weren't born in the 2008 financial crisis voting in that midterm election. So to them, 9/11 will be like Vietnam was to people that were born in the 80s. So we really do need to kind of rein this in and let the people have control over foreign policy again.
I think that's interesting to note that. How old are you, by the way?
I am 24. I'll be 25 in March.
And student at the University of Montana. In fact, we're going to cut this short because you got to head off to class before too long here. And studying pre-law, right?
So I am in law school. I'm in my second year here.
Okay,
at the University of Montana law school.
Second year of law school. What's law school like?
Oh, it's crazy. It's crazy busy here, but I've had the opportunity to be able to actually study this bill in depth. One of my classes, it was Montana constitutional law. I wrote a 47-page paper on Defend the Guard and the constitutionality of it. It's something that I'm very passionate in. And as you said in the intro, it was kind of an idea that was born out of Representative Lee Deming's classroom. An organization called Bring Our Troops Home has been introducing this around the country, and I got wind of it my senior year of high school, and I told Representative Lee Deming about this. So he is now carrying it, and we've been working on it together since.
Yeah, you know, and I think we can talk. We're just going to roll. We got some things we want to got on our plate, and we'll get to it too. This bill in particular, and more to talk about that. But as you mentioned, Lee Deming, he was a teacher. I think it was social studies and other, you know, curriculum at Laurel High School, and this is where you attend. Talk about that relationship. Talk about how you as a young person in a class like that. You're forming some opinions, and so you're asking questions, and I think a lot of people are, maybe not all of them, you know, but you're asking questions. How did this teacher, now Representative Lee Deming, what was the response that helped you kind of make up your own mind about these things?
Yeah, so Lee Deming's classroom was very unique in Laurel. It was actually an honor civics classroom, and it was sort of like a Socratic environment where students were free to ask questions about certain topics, and it was more essay focused. So students were working individually on topics that they were interested in and could go up to Representative Deming and ask questions about it, and he would give his honest opinion. But students were free to kind of they had free will to go their own direction with their research. And then eventually we went on to state and national competitions where we won awards at the state and national levels. So what happened is that I was specializing in the topic of separation of powers. And in that class, we had a question, an essay topic specifically on war powers. And I learned that the executive branch has really abused this authority since Vietnam. We have not declared war since the 40s. And since then, we have really seen our foreign policy get out of hand, where, the foreign conflicts we've been in since the 40s, we have not actually been successful. Vietnam was a disaster. Korea was a direct disaster. And I think most recently with Afghanistan is the perfect example of this, where we went in and in a 20-year kind of boondoggle, we ended up replacing the Taliban with the Taliban. And so people look back on it and they wonder, well, what were we doing? And you hear these reports all the time from National Guardsmen where year after year there was mission creep, and the mission did not stay constant. And I think what we saw with that withdrawal is exactly the consequence of that.
Well, what do you think then happens if that policy does get changed, especially at the national level? And Liam McCollum is with us here, vice chair of the Montana Libertarian Party. But also, you can catch him on Twitter. It's M. Liam McCollum, and I'll spell that L-I-A-M, and then M-C, capital C-O-L-L-U-M. M. Liam McCollum. So there for some more information on that. Wanted to get that out there. What do you think happens to the benefit of America and then the rest of the world if we do see our Congress declaring war instead of these actions taken by the executive office, these so-called military conflicts?
Yeah, I think this answer could be best answered by pointing out just how costly these wars have been. Since 9/11, our global war on terror has cost nearly $8 trillion, probably more at this point. And all of this was financed through deficits, through inflation. You know, we do not have a balanced budget in this country, so these conflicts have not been funded by direct taxation. It has been funded by the printing press, and as a result, we have had multiple financial crises that are really a consequence of malinvestment and the printing press. And I think what we have seen is just economic disaster after economic disaster, and we've also seen that we're kind of isolating ourselves on the world stage, and I think you had mentioned Ukraine at the outset. I think Ukraine is a perfect example of why a declaration of war is so necessary. You saw very early in the conflict that many people were they wanted to go full bore and they wanted to back the Ukrainians, but there was never really a time where the American people were going to put the full support of the military behind them. There was never a time where they were going to fund Ukraine until there was a win. And what we're seeing is that we're sort of weaning off of that right now. We're coming to reality, and we're starting to confront the reality that Americans were never going to back this war 100%. And if we had required a declaration of war before the United States got involved through funding it or sending soldiers over there, you know, the declaration is sort of the mechanism that tells the executive branch that the people are behind it. And in this case, the people were not.
Does a declaration of war come with any kind of there are, I suppose, that opens up some new war powers for the executive branch, probably in particular. Does it also come with other requirements for the military, such as an exit plan?
So Congress can certainly limit the president's authority. Now, a lot of people object to the Defend the Guard Act because they say that a declaration of war will give carte blanche to the executive branch and basically gives them extreme war powers. And there have been cases where the Congress has limited the president's authority through, like, limited authorizations throughout history. But in all of these cases, they were limited in time, location, and in its target. So, like, a lot of people bring up the Barbary Wars. And this was a limited authorization where there wasn't a full declaration of war, but it was limited to the Barbary pirates. And what we have seen since 9/11 is that we have these broad authorizations where they were originally intended to go after Osama bin Laden and the people responsible for 9/11. But since then, we have seen, again, this mission creep where first we started in Afghanistan going after Al-Qaeda. Then we went after the Taliban and tried a regime change operation there. Then we went into Iraq, and then Obama went into Syria, and then Obama went into Libya. And now we are in over 150 countries. There are drone strikes in over seven. And you name a place, and our National Guard has probably been there. So really, since 9/11, there's been this unprecedented kind of, it's a new hybrid concept. It's no longer just this traditional quasi-limited war. It's something entirely different, and we really do have to rein it in.
Yeah, and it's interesting. You know, mission creep is I think, a fine term for it. But you know, where does that mission creep come from? And there's a lot of politics, obviously, international politics too. But the politics of major powers that seem to be at play in every conflict we are around the world. So when I ask about where does mission creep come from, is there a good answer to that?
I mean, part of it really just comes down to the fact that we have unelected bureaucrats in charge of foreign policy right now, and that the people really are not in charge. I think what we are seeing, in particularly in countries like Syria, where, you know, in 2001, our enemy was Al-Qaeda. But in Syria currently, we just helped oust a secular dictator within Syria and replace him with al-Jolani, who was a former Al-Qaeda guy. So Jolani was fighting our men in Iraq, and now we helped oust a secular guy to replace him with former Al-Qaeda guy. So there's kind of this question about, like, what is our goal? Who are our real enemies, and who is determining foreign policy? And it's a lot of unelected people who remain within the executive branch from president to president, who keep this constant foreign policy going. And what's interesting is that no one from Montana's delegation, Sheehy, Tester, or Sheehy, Danes, Zinke, or
Downing.
Sorry, I'm spacing. Downing, yeah. Yep. Neither of them voted for the 2001 or 2002 authorization for use of military force. And I think the stat is less than 10% of the people in Congress right now were present during those votes. So we really do not have any accountability or oversight over these foreign conflicts. And the new generation has really not had an opportunity to vote on these conflicts. And I think that the winds are really changing, and people would like us to focus more at home rather than abroad.
Liam McCollum is our guest here as vice chair of the Montana Libertarian Party, but also the main advocate for House Bill 404, which is a bill that would require that before Montana can send its guard troops, National Guard troops, into a foreign conflict, there would need to be a declaration of war. And Liam, thank you again for being here. We're going to pick up on some things here in a little bit. Of course, the legislature is real busy. Lee Deming, Representative Lee Deming, who was Liam's teacher at Laurel, Montana, is as busy as the as anybody there. They got transmittal upcoming on Friday. I'll talk more about that. There was also a House lawmaker that had resigned in Montana after after he couldn't get a vape bill passed. That too many in that body favor big tobacco. We'll talk about that here in just a little bit. Liam, again, thanks for hanging on. Thanks for being with us here. Second year law school, University of Montana. Let's go back. I mean, I want to open up your to some comments about Ukraine and Russia and Trump and Zelensky and this, we're 3 years into this conflict, too. But let's go back to 404, all right? Give us this more of a status on that, too, and talk about what was said, what hearing, what committee it's in front of, and then I understand it was tabled, but there was an attempt to blast it onto the floor. Catch us up to date on that.
Yep, so the hearing took place last week. It was in House Energy, Technology, and Federal Relations. I wanted to just make a comment really quick about Ron Marshall, the representative that resigned yesterday. In his comment, he said something to the effect of how lobbyists are kind of controlling Helena. And the Montana Libertarian Party actually responded to that tweet and said, we definitely are seeing the same thing, because the adjutant general of the state of Montana has used public funds and helicopter tours to lobby against this bill, and he affirmed that and said 100% that's exactly what they're doing. So we kind of share in the sentiment of what's going on, and we definitely saw that in the committee where generals in uniform were opposing this bill. But on the other side, we had a lot of National Guard veterans, especially of this up-and-coming generation, a lot of the young men and women who have seen these endless conflicts and have seen their friends get deployed to Syria. So one man, Caleb Leger, got up and testified that after he was sent overseas and many of his friends were sent overseas, two of his friends came back and killed themselves. And he was trying to talk about the human cost of this, of these wars overseas, and that he was wearing a 22-a-day shirt signifying the amount of veterans that do unfortunately kill themselves, in large part as a result of the fact that they are not welcome when they come back home. And he was talking about that human cost to these wars and why we should pass the Defend the Guard Act. So that was sort of a sentiment that was conveyed within the committee. Unfortunately, it failed 7-7 in committee, and then it was voted to be tabled. After that, there was a blast motion on the floor to get it removed from committee, and that also failed, but thankfully, we picked up a lot of Democrats, and a lot of Democrats did want to consider this. We have a majority of Republicans in support of this, but we have been trying to work on the Democrats. Unfortunately, they have been sort of voting as a block on this. But in the blast motion, someone from committee did switch their vote. So I actually have news to report this morning. There was a vote to reconsider it within committee, and it just passed through committee, so it will be going to the floor. So it's kind of an interesting story with a back and forth, but it just passed through committee this morning.
That's good. Thanks for sharing that as well. And that's what happens. I mean, we're up against transmittal deadline, too, and that's not insignificant here. For non-revenue bills, which this would be, they've got to be passed by this Friday, as a matter of fact, onto the second body. So getting it on the floor now does give it a chance. And I haven't looked at it, so I don't really have an opinion on it. But I want you to share again what those who are in favor of it and what those who are against it. I mean, does it tie the governor's hand? If it does, then there's no chance, I think, the executive is going to approve that measure.
Yeah, so there's arguments on both sides of that. The bill last session, when it was introduced, explicitly said the governor, the bill would prohibit the governor from basically allowing the National Guard to be deployed to foreign conflicts overseas. But I think through that mechanism, it's actually tying the hands of the president, and it's enabling the governor to actually take back its authority over the state National Guard. We have seen consistently, there have been numerous examples where this kind of dual status nature of the National Guard, where it answers to the state and the federal government in different circumstances, has been in tension. And I think the biggest example was Hurricane Katrina in Louisiana. The Louisiana National Guard was overseas in Iraq. 3,200 National Guardsmen were in Iraq, and they couldn't be at home for the recovery effort. And most recently, when Tennessee was hit by hurricanes last year and they were ravaged by floods, the day before the flooding started, their National Guard was sent over to the Middle East. So we do have these problems where the state is trying to assert its authority over the National Guard and the federal government is sort of fighting back. So, and our governor, you know, has been very willing to send our National Guard down to the border or to other states to help with natural disaster recovery efforts. So I think this is actually in alignment with sort of the spirit of our governor's position on the National Guard. And the current bill does not say that it prohibits the governor's authority. In fact, it was rewritten to make it explicitly clear that all state functions of the National Guard are still permitted under this bill. The only thing that the bill does is prevent the National Guard from being sent over to combat zones. So if the governor did want to send the National Guard to the border, he could. If the governor wanted to send them to natural disaster recovery efforts, he could. And then if the federal government required the National Guard to go over to foreign training missions or foreign aid missions, the governor would still be required to do that. So everything is still intact. Every Title 10 and Title 32 power of the National Guard is intact. The only thing that this bill prevents is sending the National Guard over to unconstitutional endless combat.
Tell me something I don't know. Does the U.S. Have authority to call our Montana National Guard into arms?
So does the federal government?
Does the federal government, yeah.
Yeah, so in a sense, the National Guard authority is built into the militia clause of the United States Constitution. That when we celebrate the birthday of the National Guard, we're celebrating the first time that a militia was founded within the United States before the United States was even formed. And so what we're talking about is the militia power of the United States, and it is split between the federal government and the states. The federal government can call forward the National Guard and the militia for three explicit purposes: to prevent invasion, suppress insurrection, and enforce the laws of the Union. And some will argue that war is definitely a facet of that. Others will argue that that's not the case. But what we're seeing is that we're required to have a congressional authorization before they can be federalized. And so in the case of war, we're just asking that the state assert itself and say, before we do send our National Guard over to seas, we just need a congressional authorization. We need it to be done properly and not by fiat.
Hey, Liam, I'm out of time. I appreciate that. I know you're off to class, so we won't get to talk too much about Ukraine and Zelensky, but we'll pick that up some other time. Did get some comments out there. Vice Chair of the Montana Libertarian Party, it's Liam, L-I-A-M, McCollum, M-C-C-O-L-L-U-M, at M. Liam McCollum. Hey, Liam, thank you.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast, and join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.